Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hey, Dad, you're far away again.
Well, hello, Tater. I know. I miss you. I'm looking at you through the phone now again instead of staring right into your lovely face.
Oh, I know. Last time you were doing this, we were just side by side at my little home bar. That was nice.
Yeah. It makes it a lot easier rather than doing it over the phone. And it's only one track when you're editing.
I was going to say, it's easier for editing for sure.
Yeah.
Well, that's all right. I'm glad you got to come for a couple days, and glad you're home in one piece.
Well, I appreciate the hospitality. I had a great time, and I'm glad I'm home in one piece, too.
Yes. We are slowly crawling towards summer weather. It's set in. I don't know. It's easy to get caught off guard up here in New York, because I feel like I keep looking at the forecast, and we are settled into like 60 degrees. That feels great. But we never get a normal spring, so I'm confused. Like, I keep waiting for the weird mid-April snowfall, and it hasn't happened yet, so who knows? Maybe it's going to wait till May?
Well, I think we're done with that. I cross my fingers. But, you know, they say don't plant your flowers until Mother's Day.
Oh, is that what they say?
You could still have a rogue freeze come through up till Mother's Day, so you're not supposed to plant anything until then. I don't know. I keep, like, we get these 75 to 80 degree days, and I'm like, okay, it's finally warmed up. And then tomorrow's high will be 52, and it'll be 39 at night. Well, damn it, that's not warm. That's not summer.
Well, we're getting there, though. We're getting close.
At least it's not an ice storm.
That's true. But it's at least we can start thinking about what we're going to drink when the weather's warm. Our family likes to think about dinner about 2 months before we're going to have it. So I figured we can go ahead and start thinking about drinks about two months before we're going to drink them.
That's exactly right. We plan out all our dinners for the beach back in January.
Exactly. So I thought we could talk about one of, I think, the most iconic, delicious summer beverages in plenty of preparation for summer drinking. And that's the mojito.
Mojito! It's fun to say, too.
Mojito!
You can say it all kinds of different ways. Mojito!
Mojito! It's a fun drink to say. It's a fun drink to drink.
Yeah, when you've had a few too many, it's a neat, fun one to order. Bartender, get me a mojito! It's mojito time! Mojito me!
Well, that's one of the joys of drinking a mojito, absolutely. So just for those who are unaware, what is a mojito? It's a cocktail composed of white rum, lime juice, sugar, seltzer, and mint. Usually served in a Collins glass over ice with a nice large sprig of mint. It's very bright, refreshing, nice herbaceous cocktail. It's really just a staple of summertime drinking. And it even has its own holiday. July 11th is National Mojito Day.
Well, there you go.
Plenty of time to prepare.
And it's sort of a distant poor man's version of the mint julep.
Well, I wouldn't call it a poor man's version. I think it's...
Well, its start. Its start came that way from the rough rum of Cuba.
Yes.
The moonshine rum. And they basically threw those things in there to make it taste better.
Well, I'm going to get into the history. Yes. they were not at all, like, there's mint involved in both. That's kind of where it begins and ends as far as the relationship.
Well, how many drinks have mint in them? So there you go. They got to be related.
Well, okay. All right. Let's get into some history. I'm not going to debate you on why you're wrong.
You're the expert. That was just a personal observation. That was not a fact.
There are other, I was about to start listing off drink names that have mint in them, and I thought, that's not interesting content. Let's just talk more about the mojito.
Oh, well, that's my limited knowledge, and those are the only two I know.
I don't think anyone that was making the mojito in its origins was aware of the mint julep, because it does predate the mint julep, I'd say. It definitely does. So, speaking of which, the origins of the mojito, they're a little murky. See, as Dad alluded to, early rum was rough stuff. We didn't quite understand what we were doing when we were making rum. We knew it involved lots of rotting stuff, and we didn't quite understand how to refine it. So we ended up with a product that tasted like fusel oil and putrescence.
Yuck.
Yeah. So obviously, as far back as people have been drinking it and other sugarcane-derived booze, we're thinking like 1500s, 1600s is when the prevalence of like sugarcane spirits were known. They'd been throwing in local flavoring agents to help smooth it out for a minute. Like in Cuba, which is the birthplace of the mojito, that would have been things like lime and sugar, extra water, and of course, mint. This sort of punch idea was a common way of dealing with harsh spirits for centuries. You find this in lots of other similar cultures that were dealing with sort of rough around the edges spirits. You would just throw in other things to balance it out. And, you know, that's that way it was drinkable. So it was not at all the creation of an intrepid barman. It was the creation of thirsty farmers, sailors that were just trying to make the booze they could afford or produce potable.
You just wanted it to taste better.
Yeah, exactly. That goes back to the origins of rum. Now, however, the first recorded observation of something like a mojito in the wild dates back to the 1500s. So the story goes, and this is one of a couple origin stories for the mojito. Sometime around 1586, English sea captain and privateer pirate Sir Francis Drake landed in Havana with the intention of sacking the city for its gold. But instead, what he got was a failed mission and a lot of dysentery and scurvy in his crew. So hearing that on land there was a local treatment for such ailments that was devised by South Americans living in Cuba. So his crew went ashore, and what they discovered was a treatment composed of a punch that had aguardiente de cana, which is basically fire water, a rough, early sugarcane-derived spirit. It had mint, it had lime, and then sugarcane juice. Now, of course, the lime juice was the magic ingredient there that fixed what ailed them, but the recipe was brought back intact with the English ships as this miracle cure and a tasty beverage. In fact, it was known for a while after that as the El Drac in Cuba, and that possibly is in memory of Sir Francis Drake not sacking the city. As rum proliferated in the mid-1600s, it would become the prominent spirit in this cocktail. The name change to the mojito is another area of confusion and debate. It might have been just simply a derivative of mojadito, which is Spanish for a little wet. So it could just be like, there's lots of references to like fire, like the different languages, the translations for water gets associated with alcohol. Like, that's believable that they would have just said, a little bit of wet would have been a cocktail name. It could also be a reference to mojo, which was a Cuban seasoning that was popular at the time that was made from lime. Or there's another theory that suggests it could have been named by enslaved Africans in Cuba who gave it the name mojo in reference to the magic restorative powers it had. And it was very popular among like people working in the fields. So in any case, sometime around this time period, the name mojito becomes the dominant reference for this recipe. And that really becomes further solidified forward in time in the 1800s when the Bacardi Company is born. And they, of course, create the white rum that becomes really the standard in the mojito for a long period of time. And they also, when they put out their recipe for a drink involving this ingredients, they call it the mojito, and it's using Bacardi white rum.
Well, of course, why not attach yourself to the drink? You have to use Bacardi's white rum to make a proper mojito. Who says that? Bacardi says that.
Yeah, Bacardi is a very old company, and they've put out a lot of good products. There are definitely a lot of really amazing, I dare say, better rums out there. But when it comes to like white rum for like a mojito, Bacardi's solid. Bacardi's good. Bacardi's good. They made a good move there.
Well, no wonder they're old. They're vampires. I've seen them on the label.
Oh, yeah. There you go. There's a secret to Bacardi's longevity.
Yeah, they're vampires.
Everybody knows that vampires love mojitos.
That's right.
Yeah.
Or they like their victims to drink mojitos first, and then they get them secondhand.
Oh, then they're a little minty. I guess that's...
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah.
It's like they're the after dinner mint.
Of course, sort of the biggest proliferation of popularity of the mojitos comes at the hand of what else but Prohibition.
Of course, Prohibition always has a hand in all our alcoholic stories.
It does. It does. And, you know, I think when I first started the show, I thought Prohibition was just across the board a bad thing. But then when you see all the things it did, it influenced drinking in so many positive ways that it's hard to really say it was across the board bad. And this is one such case, because so many Americans, thirsty Americans, flocked to Cuba to keep drinking and discovered the drinks they were making there. Americans drank a lot of mojitos and then, you know, introduce the demand for mojitos around the world.
That's right.
Now, one such American that gets wrapped up in this mojito story but might not have actually been involved is a guy we've talked about a lot on this podcast, Ernest Hemingway.
He's a famous drinker, so if you have a famous drink, he must be associated with it.
This was before your time on the show, Dad, but like literally there's so many drinks. The Bloody Mary, the mojito, different versions of the daiquiri, the martini. Ernest Hemingway pops up in so many drink origin stories, and Ernest Hemingway might have made this drink first. Like he's like the Where's Waldo of the alcohol world.
Ernest Hemingway, the best bartender that ever lived. He was a decent writer as well.
He pops up a lot, and I think I don't know. He wasn't always there. It's just he's a good person to include if you want your cocktail to be popular. Mm. And this is one such case, because it is often claimed that Ernest Hemingway loved mojitos, but that claim is largely traced back to one source, and that is a bar in Havana, La Bodeguita del Medio. Now, this bar, which was opened in 1942, claims to be the birthplace of the mojito. Now, if you notice the time it opened and this idea of like Prohibition being what drove Americans to drink there, there's a lot of things that don't line up. The mojito had been around for centuries. Prohibition had already happened. They were probably not the birthplace of the mojito, but they might have been the first to really kind of codify it into like a recipe. They definitely were known as making the best one. Their recipe is often the one that's referenced. So not. You know, counting them out entirely from the storyline of the mojito. But their big claim is that Hemingway loved to drink his mojitos there, and so much that he signed their wall with this little phrase that said, "My mojito in La Bodeguita, my daiquiri in El Floridita." Referencing, of course, the place he loved to drink his daiquiri, which he definitely did drink. And they have this framed now on their wall. Like, this is Hemingway was here and he signed off on our mojito.
And no one can prove otherwise.
Well, except there is a lot of proof otherwise.
Oh.
Yes. Now, as many Hemingway historians have noted, and we talked about in the Hemingway episode, Hemingway liked to write about what he was drinking. You could write an entire cocktail book off of just the drinks that Hemingway talks about drinking in his writing. And he likes to write about where he drinks. The bars that he like regularly went to have been enshrined in his writing. So the fact that he never once mentions a mojito and he never once mentions this bar is a little sus.
Yeah, it doesn't match up with his MO.
Do I think Hemingway could have enjoyed a mojito? Yeah, he drank all across the board. He drank heavy stirred drinks. He drank light refreshing drinks. You know, I think he could have enjoyed a mojito, but I don't think it was his favorite cocktail, and I don't necessarily think that he... Even the fact that he signed this wall is up for debate, because some Hemingway historians have compared the text and said that doesn't quite line up with Hemingway's handwriting, so it's hard to believe.
He never met a drink he didn't like.
I mean, that's true, actually. And in any case, it's good advertising for a bar that clearly is doing a good job anyway. I mean, they're known for their mojitos, so, whether or not there's a Hemingway connection, who knows?
Well, I've learned one thing is nobody kept good records back in those days. So a lot of people claim a lot of things to do with different alcohols, and who's to say what's what or where's where.
Yeah, that's true. There's a lot of bar history that it's not about who kept the best records. It's about who told the best story. That's just it.
If I ever get the ability to go back in time, I'm going to find all these things and make notes.
See, Dad, I think you would have been a good barman back in the day because you love to tell stories despite facts.
That's true. I don't let facts get in the way. And if the ending, if the real ending is kind of boring, then you just juice it up a little bit.
Tommy Smurl, the greatest bartender that ever lived, invented every classic cocktail to date just because he came up with a really good story as to how.
That's right. That's what your mother would always say when I'd go to tell a story. She'd say, now, is this a true story or a railroad story?
It's true. It's true. They just keep getting better every time you tell them.
Embellishment. Embellishment.
That's, you know, what like I said, whatever the case, all of this helped propel the mojito into what it is today, which is a call drink around the world. Very popular cocktail. It's forever committed to film memory in the movie Die Another Day from 2002. It's a James Bond movie. Have you seen this movie, Dad?
Oh, yes, with Halle Berry.
Mm-hmm. And I rewatched the scene where they talk about mojitos, and it's really, I forgot how, it's been a while since I've seen a James Bond movie, and I think I've seen only the Daniel Craig ones recently, so I forgot how cheesy these movies can be and how kind of creepy they can be. Pierce Brosnan is like checking Halle Berry out with his binoculars, and then she comes out of the water and he offers her a mojito, and he like overpronounces it, like just, you know, like trying to make it sound like the most exotic thing ever. And Halle
mojito?
Berry is made to like she's made to pretend that she's never heard of this drink before. And he like questions her, like, oh, is it too strong for you? She's like, I can learn to like it, or something like that. It's like, it's a mojito, man. Like, James Bond, the man who drinks 6-ounce martinis, is drinking a mojito?
And I like it shaken, not stirred.
Well, that's fine. That's the way we do it, sir.
Oh, well, lucky for you.
It's a really goofy scene, but you know, it does, they do drink mojitos. He has a lot of mint in them. Those drinks look like half mint. But I do, whenever I think about mojitos, I'm always reminded of this very kind of funny back and forth that took place in the bar world in 2015. This mojito fight that took place in the Vice Munchies column in that year. Basically, there was an article that was published. It was interviewing this guy, Felix Cohen, who is a very, by all regards, a very smart British barman. But he was talking about his program and how, you know, how fancy it is, all the cool science he's into. And he made the statement, don't walk into my bar and order a mojito. In fact, the quote from the article is, please don't walk into my bar and order a mojito. I have no problem with a mojito. The mojito is a fantastic drink. But my problem is that it suggests that you don't want to read my menu. It's like going to an amazing restaurant and just eating burgers and chips. Again, there's nothing wrong with just eating burgers and chips, but there's often something much better for you. And that's what I'd love to see more of. People putting their drinks and their nights in the hands of the bartender. Now, from there, he goes on to mention his degree in psychology and the fact that he's like rendering fat and aging cognac and fat and all sorts of very intense bar mixology, whatever. And
just how brilliant he is.
He's very smart and he has a very, very exclusive, intense community around him, which is, you know what, that's fine. It's all fine. But that little bit about not ordering a mojito, it set off another well-respected barman here in New York, a dude by the name of Al Sotak, who I've actually barbacked for a few times. Now he opened a really cool cocktail bar kind of out in my neighborhood. I don't know him personally, but I respect his work. And I think as much as I've loved many cocktails he's made for me, I think the bit of his work that I respect the most is his response to this article. So Al Sotak wrote an article in response to this piece, and it also ran in Munchies. So Vice was not getting involved in this debate. They were just running both articles and being like, whatever, that's fine.
And he said, I will come in your bar and I'll order a mojito.
Well, because he's a bartender, and he basically said, no, we should make the mojito. And I'm going to link the whole article when we put this out, because I think everyone should read it. It's hilarious. But I'm going to read a bit from it. He starts off by saying, "I am super psyched to make you a mojito. No, really. You want one? I will bang that motherfucker out like nobody ever has before. Seriously, I'm not fucking around. First of all, you're asking for it, so chances are you actually want a mojito. You want to toss me $12 at least to pick up 3 bottles and throw some mint in a shaker. So I'm going to assume you're not being a dick about it. Hell, even if you are, here you go." He goes on to say, "Maybe you only know 3 drinks and had an anxiety attack when the frantic dervish of a bartender suddenly was staring at you with the heat of 1,000 suns. Maybe it was your dead mother's favorite drink and it would have been her birthday. Maybe brown and bitter isn't your bag and you get a little heartburn with a lot of citrus. So you like your daiquiri riffs served tall. Whatever, dude, I already made it. And yeah, man, you didn't spend 15 minutes perusing my menu. And yeah, I did spend a bunch of time on it. And yes, it's clever, maybe to the point of being glib, but that's cool. I have buddies who will make me feel good about how good I am at what I do and get my pop culture references. I know I'm special. I already tricked a hot girl into marrying me. I'm all set over here, except for the $12, which seriously, I need right now." So,
man, he was locked and loaded.
You know, this was 2015, like I said, and this was I was really just making the transition from bar back to bartender around that time. I guess by then I was bartending, but I hadn't been doing it long. And I'd really struggled with, as much as I loved what we did in the industry, I hated how we acted about how we did. I hated this, like, you need to come in my bar and order something from me that will earn you my respect. Kind of thought, like, we got so deep into legitimizing our craft that we forgot that a huge part of what we do is hospitality.
Well, you know, there's nothing wrong with trying drinks that you've never tried before, and I, you know, certainly got to do that, like when we were at the Dead Rabbit and stuff, and found some that I really love. But there's some people that they know what they like. And they order what they want and what they like, and they're going in and they're paying their money. They just expect you to do what they want.
Well, and there's this, I feel like there's a couple cocktails that get this sort of treatment in the bar world, where they're not bad drinks, but for some reason it's like, it's a sort of initiation to have a certain amount of disrespect for them, and the mojito is one of them. And, you know, I mean, and a lot of the argument comes back to, oh, well, they're hard to make. They're not. They're not. They are no more complicated than any other, as you know, Al Sotek put it, 3-ingredient drink that you throw some mint in. Like, it's not a complicated drink to make. Maybe it has a little bit more cleanup than other drinks, but, you know, probably not as much as some of your fancier menu cocktails. I feel like that's that. It's the desire to dislike things that are a little bit too popular and, like, digestible and just good.
Just good, huh?
Yeah. We talked about frosé, and the frosé is another one of those things where it's like, you have it, but you're supposed to kind of, like, roll your eyes at people that drink it. But it's also the easiest thing in the world to, like, put in front of somebody. Or, like, a vodka soda, kind of the same deal. Like, bartenders that don't want to make vodka sodas, like, oh, that person probably drinks vodka sodas. I'm like, oh, you mean a drink that's going to take me 30 seconds to make and I can charge $12 for? And then that's good? Like, you know, kegs sometimes kick. Fancy cocktail ingredients run out. Vodka soda, there is very little chance that I'm going to run out of the stuff to make a vodka soda. A night of making a bunch of vodka sodas is an easy fucking night for me.
Well, you know, it wasn't that many years back. I mean, it's been a little while, but it was like I'd never really heard of a mojito before. And then it was like everybody was drinking them. Everywhere it went, everybody wanted mojitos. And I was like, where did that come from? And, you know, why does everybody want them now? Now, it seems to have died out. I don't hear that nearly as much as I used to. But there for a while, everybody was ordering them.
Why it got left outside of the classic cocktail movement, I don't quite understand. But it is a Prohibition era cocktail. Like, that it doesn't, you order a mojito and you're looked at one way, or you order an Aviation or, I don't know, a Last Word and you're looked at another way. It's interesting to me.
Well, I wonder how much, too, though, does entertainment and stuff actually influence people? Like you mentioned, the Die Another Day, when he does that. How many people said, I think I'll try a mojito. And then another movie they mentioned was a Johnny Depp movie called The Rum Diary. That was, I guess that was prior to, it was, he was playing that Hunter S. Thompson.
Yeah, yeah.
But it wasn't that Living and Dying in Vegas or whatever it was or something. But it wasn't that one. That one, he played Hunter S. Thompson in that one, too. But this was prior to that. This was like in 2011 when The Rum Diary came out.
Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
There you go. That's what it was. And it was something to do with Las Vegas and something was loathsome or bad or something.
Bad stuff in Las Vegas, yes.
Yeah, bad stuff in Las Vegas. but he evidently drank a lot of mojitos in that. And so they attribute that as another one where people saw it and everybody ran out and grabbed one.
It's interesting because it's that idea, like pop culture making a drink popular. It's another point that actually Al makes in the article. But he talks about like in Mad Men, when Mad Men was popular, everybody wanted a Manhattan. And the idea of like rolling your eyes at somebody who wants a Manhattan because they were inspired by Mad Men when the Manhattan is an excellent cocktail. It reminds me of like the indie music scene of like, oh, I knew them before they were cool. Like I knew about that cocktail before it was popular. Like, what are we doing? Like I had a bar manager actually would make a mint syrup specifically so we wouldn't have to handle the process of mojitos, which it's like, but they're better. They're definitely better with fresh mint. And also it's like specifically to not give the best product possible to the mojito drinkers, because if you encourage them, they'll keep coming back. It's like,
so give them a shitty drink and they'll say, yeah. No, they make a shitty mojito. I don't want to order that there or I don't want to go there. That's what you might get. And this, and they're evidently saying, fine, don't come. We don't want you. If that's the
we
kind of drink you're going to drink.
Kind of drinking.
Yeah. As long as your money's green, I would encourage any kind of drinking if I'm the bar owner.
You know, I do think there are some drinks that when people order them, I'm like, I could probably lead you to something that's going to give you a better night. It's if you know what you like, it's not, I don't feel like it's my place to step in and go, actually, have you looked at my menu? There's this line where at some point, I think bartenders, not across the board at all, but there's a certain culture in the industry where we started acting like we were the main characters of the night. And it's like,
yeah.
I think when you think of people coming to a bar to like relax or go on a date or read a book or just unwind, your bartender is not the main character. They're not the starring role. They're like the non-romanceable NPC that's there to provide you with useful knowledge and like sell you weapons upgrades, but cocktails instead. Like that's it. Like it's not, that's how I feel like when I'm behind the bar. And I kind of felt like I was getting lost in an industry around that time because it was like, I'll never have that attitude. And if that's what I have to survive in this attitude is this ability to tell people I know better than you what you like, I'm never going to do that. So when I read this article, it was such a breath of fresh air of like, okay, I'm not the only one that feels this way. I'm not the only one that legitimately, I want my customers to have a good experience and I am just a tool that they have access to give them that good experience. And if their good experience is, you know, Budweiser in a can or a vodka soda or a mojito, or if they want to ask my opinion about the cocktail that they might want to try, all of that is my job. Just very, very against that whole attitude behind a bar. And I think it's the mojito gets caught up in this argument because it is that cocktail that sits on the verge of like, it's massively popular, but it's popular because it's good. It's the Taylor Swift of the cocktail world. These weird divides we have of like, these are cocktails that are cool to order. These are cocktails that are not cool to order. This is a way to engage with your bartender. This is not, of course, respect matters. You know, there's what Al says in the article is like, for me, it's always a no brainer. Being a good customer was a lot like being a good bartender. Don't be a dick. That's kind of it.
They just have the sign up over your door where if you're at your bar someday, just don't be a dick.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this is a bit of a tangent, but I do think, like I said, I'll link the article. It's a really good article, or rather a defense, not just of the mojito, but of whatever you want to drink on the whole. Because I think if there's one thing that I would like to do with this podcast, it's to make drinking and cocktailing accessible to everybody and imbue everybody with the confidence to be able to engage with what they're drinking. And also, but that have that same confidence to know that what they want to drink is totally fine. Be that a mojito, a non-alcoholic cocktail, a vodka soda, or a super cool menu cocktail.
I saw where they call a non-alcoholic mojito a nojito.
Yeah. You know, I will say, I like that. And I will say, like, sometimes I get asked, like, what's a good, like, mocktail you'd recommend? And this is like, because I feel like a lot of bartenders would hate me for saying this, but it's true. The mojito without alcohol is one of the most successful translations, like, from alcoholic to non-alcoholic, because you're just leaving out white rum, which, yes, impacts the flavor, but you've still got so much going on there that it's still a really solid drink if you take out the rum and just add more seltzer. You're basically having a sparkling mint limeade, and that's delicious.
I want to see a six-year-old sitting there drinking a nojito that doesn't look any different, you know, because the white rum wouldn't show up, so it wouldn't look any different than the real one the parents are drinking. It's like, look at the six-year-old drinking a mojito.
I'm totally going to make nojitos for Charlie and Cooper.
Oh, I think you should.
We're together.
Yeah, absolutely. At the beach.
I like them.
At the beach.
I think they would enjoy them.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I hope that this encouraged you to have the confidence to order a mojito wherever you are. If the bar is set up for a mojito, obviously not every bar is going to have fresh mint. And if the bar doesn't have fresh mint, just don't even bother. Just wait till you're at a place that has it.
But if you want a damn mojito, order a damn mojito.
Not that I'm not. Don't go in and demand mojitos from your bartender if they don't have it.
Taylor said you have to make me one.
No. I am talking about a very specific attitude in the industry that I think is dying out too. I will say that. I feel like we're moving towards an era of like more balanced bartenders that care about hospitality just as much, if not more so, than like cocktail menus. I feel like we've moved past this. So over on the video, obviously we're going to make a classic mojito and we're going to make one of
mojitos.
My favorite. Yeah. Dad's going to say the word mojito a lot. And we're going to talk about one of my favorite variations of a mojito, which is sort of a fancier upgrade of a mojito called an Old Cuban. So check that out. That'll be up this weekend.
And I'm going to make them and drink them.
Of course, if you want to find us on social media, you can find us as Neat Boozecast on Twitter and Instagram. If you want to join our Patreon, we have rewards. We have a new video series that is launching this month that is all accessible with your Patreon donations. So check us out there. If you want to email us, you can email us at neattheboozecast@gmail.com. And if you want to find us on Facebook,
we're at Neat the Boozecast page.
Neat the Boozecast page?
Yeah. Well, the page isn't part of it. It's a page, and it's called Neat the Boozecast. I don't know who Paige is.
Say something different.
I don't know who Paige is. I don't know.
All right. Yes, and thank you, Dad, for being here.
Well, thank you, Taylor, for having me. It's always a pleasure.
And I'm happy to have you, and thank you all for listening. I have been Taylor Schmurl.
And I've been Tommy Schmurl.
And this has been...
Neat. You get a mojito. Everybody get a mojito.
There's a compromise. You got to make a mojito for a customer. Make one for yourself alongside of it. There you go.
Just make a whole pitcher of mojitos.
One for one mojitos.
There you go.